our moderator, Kamal Dervish.
Well, I thank you all for your, you know, for your engagement, for all the questions. We don't have time, of course, to take all of them, but I will try to pick some of the most, you know, the most direct ones, and also there are some that actually are similar. And I'd like to first ask Zahir, in terms of the woman and the kind of cultural or political factors, how difficult is it to really reach women in the Arab world, in your programs?
Women are key in any society. In places like in the Arab world in general, there are cultural and traditional handicaps. Nevertheless, from a legal point of view, from a governmental support point of view, this does not lack at all. Most of the programs we have done in Saudi were through local NGOs with government support, providing a lot of vocational training to help provide self-employment for these women. The objective was to provide new jobs, self-employment, so these women could navigate within the cultural and traditional difficulties of the society.
Thank you. Almina, you talked about social entrepreneurship, the importance of social entrepreneurship. But what about social entrepreneurs, people are asking? You know, what makes a social entrepreneur? What's the secret there? What makes them different?
I think the very important is the changing the paradigm in the main, in the authorities, in the all the people. For example, sometimes when I talk with the mayors, with the worker public, I ask, why the waste put in the poor areas? And they say, the poor people like dirty, they don't pay for the service. I say, no, I live in this area. I want different. I can pay. We are not poor. We have creative. We have other possibilities. We need changing the main in all people in the private sector, in the public sector, and in the leaders too, because sometimes the leaders say, I'm a poor people, please give me. I say, no, you can other possibilities that change your life.
And daring. Thanks a lot. And William, one question addressed to you. The link between the actual participation in equity financing, you know, in these community companies, and the jobs. Is it what creates the additional job? Is it the additional capital that there is? Or is it also a question of what kind of technology you use, you know, how that structure of capital influences the choice of the production method?
There are two reasons for the community-owned companies. One is that it turns out that when you want to upgrade people's skills, you need to make some capital investments in machinery which will upgrade the quality of product, which is one of the issues that came up, the questions. In order to do that, you need to raise funds. And the model that we have come up with is that you raise the money in the form of equity from the artisan community. They in turn get shares, which is actually just a divisible piece of a larger asset pie. And we provide them the market. And that's pretty much how it works.
Thank you very much. Well, I think this was the first round. And now, if I'm correct, we will...
We'll go for a couple more minutes.
We were too much on time. Well, let me ask one more difficult question. And I think, you know, it reflects a much wider debate in the world. Because job creation somewhere is sometimes perceived as job destruction somewhere else. You know, create job here, but then maybe is that a threat to the job elsewhere? Whereas, of course, the idea is to create jobs worldwide. Even, as you know, in the rich countries, there are job worries and unemployment problems, particularly in Europe. So any thought on that? And particularly, Zahir, you mentioned something about national jobs, and I know, you know, as the population in Saudi increased a lot, what wasn't a problem in the past, 15, 20 years ago, because the population was so small and there was, in fact, a tremendous labor shortage. Okay, but now the situation is changing. The Saudi has gotten a much bigger population. So now it's important to find jobs for the young Saudis, which wasn't the case 20 years ago. But that then may mean, you know, that some of the immigrants, some of you said, lose their jobs. How do you see, I mean, this is a net job creation. It's not just a substitution. But there is also an element of substitution, I guess.
No, there must be an element of substitutions because you can't have these young Saudis sitting without any jobs at home. Nevertheless, what we've seen lately is, for example, a lot of the expatriates from India have been leaving Saudi for better paying jobs in India. So there is job creation in India.
It is true.
It is a fact.
William is creating a job in India. Yeah.
All the educated are leaving. We have problems finding educated staff. So the young Saudis are taking the place of these Indians, for example. But nevertheless, there are other jobs that are new additions. We are doing franchising. We're getting franchises from abroad and giving them to young men and funding them. The taxi driver thing is not a substitution. Other examples relate to
women may often also.
Women mostly, but these are new jobs completely.
Right, exactly. Well, let me, you know, I think it's one thing that's important when we think of employment and jobs always to remember, that yes, there will be creative destruction, in a sense. You know, there will be jobs that leave a certain area and other jobs that come in. That's part of growth, that's part of expansion. But in the end, when you have people with jobs, better jobs, higher incomes, thanks to these jobs, they demand products and services that somebody else has to produce. I mean, it's a very fundamental, of course, basic economics. You know, but we often still in the political debate, it's forgotten. The Indian workers that, you know, have higher incomes, thanks to William, will demand products. And some of these products will come from the U.S. or from Turkey, I hope, or indeed from Saudi Arabia. And I think that, you know, one has to keep remembering that that happens. Now, of course, to help the transitions and to make it easier for the system to work is, you know, it's not automatic. And I think when we say jobs, we have to be careful also to protect those who lose their jobs, not just, you know, the new jobs, but we have to find retraining, relocation, help to more mobility and all that, new skills, so that dynamic process that creates jobs in the world economy, while it's happening, is not too disruptive of some of those who will lose their jobs. So I think that is, okay, now Gail is here. I think we're on time, more or less. We're trying to be so efficient and, you know, focused, but all right.
One of the things I like about Kamal, he goes with the flow, when I like to have to keep going. Okay, now we have the feedback from you all. We're going to share it with our panelists, and I'm going to go over it quickly, and it, I believe, will show up on the slides. And the first one is, what actions by sectors can be taken to create more jobs? I think everyone got through on a very important point, which you all concur with, which is vocational training for women and those on the low end and the high end of the economy. Encouraging governments and businesses to work together to build new markets and improve connectivity of supplies and consumers. Economic incentives, tax-free zones and tax credits. Bring informal economies into a structured and regulated economic system. It's a great thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's a big thing to do when you look at how big the informal sector is. Build a pro-poor constituency of government and NGOs and ensure early engagement with government to design pro-poor regulatory frameworks. That's a really good idea because often these regulatory frameworks are developed by governments absent the perspectives of our panelists and the people they represent, and often with more input from those of us on the outside than those on the ground. A couple of gems about leveraging pools of micro savings to create economies of scale, and another one, which is to found a capital equipment donation program, another really interesting idea that could also be applied to technology, where multinationals and large companies could donate equipment to foster local industries and thus reduce the costs. We'll move quickly to the actions by individuals. The first is to volunteer. And I think one of the things that's important to tease out of this, and it's important that you raised it, is that we can be much more creative with how and where we volunteer. Think about giving our time, but also our particular skills. We've got a lot of people in this room that know a lot about business, a lot about jobs, and a lot about how these things work on the ground. How do we donate our time to really translate that? Focus on local communities and take action where you see a need. I think we've heard examples in all three cases of how people started at the ground level and are building up, and I think are and ultimately will bring profound change to a much larger area than those small communities, just by demonstrating what can be done. Start with your own spending and behaviors, such as buying fair trade. That's really important. It's also really important to find these bags made out of recycled goods that Albina talked about, now being exported to Mexico. We'll get them up here. And also buy things that are made by local entrepreneurs and artisans. Leaders are everywhere. They need to be identified and supported. We heard over lunch about one of the commitments where a young man in Rwanda connected with a group working on a commitment, and how just by making those connections, they have invested in somebody who is going to be a leader, as all of you are. The gem is create policies and companies that employees and executives donate time for charitable giving. I want to say something about this, because, again, this volunteering time is critical, but also donate your expertise. And bear in mind that there's different kinds of expertise in this room. We've got expertise of people who are on the ground who, quite frankly, could donate some time to a business to say, if you really want to create jobs in my community, here's some ways you can do it. Do it in the other direction. NGOs can donate time to each other as a way to exchange ideas. So it's time, but it's also substance. I'm now going to turn back to our panel for the last round and their final comments and responses to your findings. And thank you very much.
Thanks, Gail. So final telegraphic comments. But, William, I mean, I want to point one to you. You know, you're creating these companies. The informal sector is becoming more formal thanks to you. What about taxes, social security contribution, health, and all that, you know? I found it a huge problem in the informal sector in Turkey. You don't want too much formality, but some taxes need to be paid, some books have to be kept, some accounts have to be there, and yet the informal sector often doesn't like that.
That's a real problem, but it's one, I think, that has to be addressed at a governmental level. So I'm really not, it has to be addressed by policymakers, and I'm hoping that they will see the wisdom of it in a few years. But should I make the closing remark now in connection to what
yeah.
you said?
Or just anything. Feel
because
free.
I think the way I came to this idea of community-owned companies is that I was at a game reserve in India, and I was quite amazed to see that the tiger population is being wiped out by the very people who live at the edge of the game sanctuary. And this is the Ranthambore National Reserve, one of the world's really last refuges of the tiger. And the local people were doing two things. And one was they were cutting the trees, and secondly, they were allowing people in and showing them the way, showing them how to shoot the tigers, because tiger bone has a very high price in China. I couldn't understand this behavior, because here were people who were working in the sanctuary, and there were forest guards and, you know, working in the hotels or ringing the sanctuary. And we had some work with the crafts community, which was also on the edge of the sanctuary. And when I spoke to them about why they were doing this, they said that, look, these hotels are coming up. They're charging $600 a night. Tourists are coming in from all over the world. And our children, our sons and daughters, are getting jobs as, you know, janitors, waiters. I mean, if they're really lucky, they might get a job as a local driver. But everybody else in these hotels is being trucked in from the outside. And when I looked around, it was true, some of the staff in these hotels had been, you know, coming. The manager was Australian. And I sensed that what the people wanted is they wanted a piece of that pie. And they were saying, since we're not going to get a piece of this pie, we have no interest in actually protecting this resource. They were not interested in jobs for their children as janitors and, you know, waiters. And that's actually where the idea of the community-owned company came from. And I realized that I needed to personalize this and make it work for the industry that I was in, which was a retail business. And so with this idea, I personalized it for the business that we had some influence over. And each of you are from different businesses. And I would, you know, maybe this creative thought can trigger thoughts in your own businesses or your own spheres of influence.
Thanks a lot. Albina, some final comment in light of...
Yeah. I'm thinking in the 20,000 people living, making a living or recycling waste. Now we're working only to 2,000 people. But we believe if all work together to create jobs, the social problem is less. There aren't prostitution, there aren't delinquents, because when the people has a job, there is dignity. They access to food, to health service, education service. They can say citizen, because many people now, they don't have citizen.
Yeah.
They don't visibility. In Peru, in other countries too, the families living in the dump, maybe for many people don't exist. They don't see. But they working so hard. If they don't working in this issue, now many cities has a mountain on the waste. But they recover many ways, because in the waste there are money. We say, for many peoples, the garbage is a problem. For us, it's an opportunity.
Thank you so much. Zahir, last word.
My comment would be on the GEM regarding create policy and company that employee executives donate time. Our view on this is that for most companies and most corporations, CSR is an intrinsic part of business. It's an intrinsic part of the mission. It is not a sideshow. It is not something that should be given to CSR VP floating on the side of the company. It is something that should be followed by the CEO himself. He should care and follow it like he looks at his profit every quarter. CSR is very important. It requires the leadership and commitment of the top man. And if it's not there, it will not work. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, I think thank you all very much. And thank you for bringing this experience, this very concrete experience of a big problem here today. I think sharing experiences, but then taking action and participating in the effort is, I think, what the CGI is all about. And lots can be done. It doesn't happen automatically, you know, and it doesn't happen fast enough. So I think actions and rapid actions in a network sharing the information can make a huge difference. So I'm going to turn it over to Gail now. I have to run to a meeting with back at the UN, but it was a real joy and pleasure to be here. And thank you so much.
Oh, hello, hello. Matthias, will you take this, please? And as our panel moves, let me extend my sincere thanks. And you're welcome to stay up here for the next round or move over and have a seat. Because I think all of you brought really important points to the fore, and all of you really hit the nail on the head with your final comments. And if I may, Albina, I would like to give a special congratulations to you. When we first spoke to you, you said, I want to speak. I want to tell my story. I'm a little nervous. You did a beautiful job. Now we get to another fun part of CGI where we are able to present certificates to members who have made commitments for this year. I am very proud to introduce our commitment presenter for this session. He's a man I have worked for and worked with and will always work for, and is a real friend of CGI. He's been an advisor since the beginning. He's been a leader in public service and a leader in the business community. My friend and CGI's advisor, Sandy Berger.
Thank you, Gail, very much for those words and for a great day so far. It's really been fascinating. It's my real privilege to present three certificates for three terrific commitments. If I could get Jonathan Tortolo from the National Geographic Center for Sustainable Development and Bill Drayton, the CEO and founder of Ashoka, one of the truly great NGOs in the world, to come forward. Jonathan is the National Geographic Center for Sustainable Development Director, and Bill, I think all of you know. The National Geographic Society will form a global geotourism network. This is a whole new way of looking at tourism in development context. It will audit best practices, direct a global marketing campaign, oversee 6 pilot programs, and create an investment fund to support entrepreneurs in the geotourism industry. Geotourism sustains and enhances the geographic character of a place, its environment, its culture, its aesthetics, its heritage, and the residents all benefit from that. This commitment will directly bolster the economic welfare of millions of people by creating employment opportunities around the production of indigenous crafts, local cuisine, guide services, hospitality products. This is a truly creative initiative, and I congratulate both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If I could get Roger Hamilton from XL Results Foundation and Joan Holmes from the Hunger Project to come up. This is an empowerment commitment, which I love. You're working your way up. We're going to wait for you. Time is going to freeze. All eyes are on you.
Thank you so much, Sam.
The Hunger Project, with the aid of $5 million from XL Results, will build the capacity in India of 50,000 elected women leaders, through local action campaigns, advocacy alliances, and media strategy. The partnership will boost the positions of women elected to local government in rural areas throughout India and directly enhance access to health, education, nutrition, and better incomes for 15 million rural Indians. I am particularly proud of the fact that this commitment was inspired by the visit of President Clinton that I was on to female leaders in Rajasthan who are now in substantial leadership roles in their communities on a government level. Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much.
If I could get Sadodreen Haswani and Sura Haswami to join us on the stage from the Hashu Foundation.
There we are. Hello.
Sura, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Very nice to see you. This is a commitment that really has some sting. The Hashu Foundation is committed to empower women in northern Pakistan through the Women's Honey Bee Production Project. with training, microfinance, and facilitating access to markets. The project will have a strong focus on developing the production of byproducts and creating linkages to markets, and as a result, will increase participants' income and allow them to become more integrated in the decision-making process within their own communities. This commitment is expected to improve the incomes of 40 women and create at least two honeybee associations in northern Pakistan. Thank you very, very much. Thank you all. This is what CGI is really about. It's about the commitments, and I think those three were really representative of the great work you're doing. Thank you.
And Sammy, the sample of the honey for you.
Oh, thank you. My God.
Well, we already started. We started the project.
All right. I'm going to go eat my honey right now. I'm going to see my honey.
Thank you all very much. And our next session will start fairly soon, but please enjoy the break, and thank you very much for attending and for your contributions.
This is about developing basically you pay.